Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Tomorrow on Capitol Hill, Congressman Peter King, chair of the Homeland Security Committee, launches hearings on radicalization in the Muslim American community. Peter King says, look at the Fort Hood shooter, the Times Square bomber. It's a real threat. There's real pushback, too. Cries of witch hunt, cries of a new McCarthyism. This hour on Point, American Muslims and the Peter King hearings. You can join the conversation. Has the country been too politically correct to call out a problem here, or is a whole community of fellow Americans now being unfairly put on trial? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's Peter King on Monday in an interview with Fox News, the Long Island congressman, saying he's not the only one worried about a threat to American security.
It's not just me saying this. The Attorney General, Eric Holder, says he can't sleep at night because of the growing amount of radicalization among young Muslim American men. John Napolitano says the threat level is the highest it's been since September 11th of this growing radicalization. So I have no choice. I'm going ahead with the hearings, and they can yell in Times Square, and they can get all these celebrities out they want attacking me. I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to give in to political correctness. I'm going ahead.
Peter King this week in a CNN interview on Sunday, Congressman Keith Ellison, a Democrat from Minnesota and one of two Muslims in Congress, said the radicalization hearings are too narrowly focused.
It's absolutely the right thing to do for the chairman of the Homeland Security Committee to investigate radicalization. But to say we're going to investigate a religious minority in a particular one, I think is the wrong course of action to take.
With me in the studio today is Leila Ahmad, professor at the Harvard Divinity School. Her new book, out next month, is A Quiet Revolution, The Veil's Resurgence from the Middle East to America. Leila Ahmad, welcome back to On Point. Thank you for being here.
Pleasure to be here.
And joining us from Washington is Asra Nomani, author of Standing Alone in Mecca, An American Woman's Struggle for the Soul of Islam. Her essay in the Daily Beast this week is headlined, Profile Me, Please. King's Muslim hearings are no witch hunt. Asra Nomani, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Leila, we've been talking about this for years here, since 9/11 put a spotlight on this whole arena. American Muslims, obviously, in this country for many, many years before that. Let me come first to you. When you see the hearings that are on the docket for tomorrow, Peter King's comments in advance of the hearings, the lineup that he's prepared for these hearings, what does it say to you about how this congressman, this committee, is approaching the Muslim American community in this country?
Well, I think there's no doubt that we want to be protected. If it enhances security, then that's fine. I think the question is, there have been reports from such as the report from Duke in North Carolina, which say that actually Muslims have been cooperating, because I think Mr. King's comment is that they have not been cooperating, but the report seems to suggest otherwise. So the concern is that this is going to not actually enhance our security particularly, but on the other hand, it will put Muslims in the spotlight as, by definition, dangerous to this society, and this will contribute to the conversation or to the negative views of Muslims in America.
There is a security issue that Duke, North Carolina study, and we'll hear from one of its authors later in this hour, looks to the number of attacks in recent years. Of course, it also puts them up against, it says, Muslim Americans have executed terrorist attacks in the United States since 9/11, killing 33 people. That's about 3 deaths per year. There have been approximately 150,000 murders in the United States since 9/11. That may be a little bit of sort of statistical context. Or do you feel a smear on an entire community with these hearings, or a legitimate security inquiry?
Well, on the evidence that I have, which is that the report that you just mentioned suggests that Muslims have been cooperating. But the trouble is, I can't be totally firm. I can't take a position, a hard line on that, as far as I know, because if there is security threat, then we certainly need protection. But the other side is the potential of smearing, and I can't forget, you know, that, I mean, thank goodness we're some distance from that, but not so long ago, it was a mantra here to say that Muslims hate us for our freedoms. And the very notion that if you watch Tahrir Square, clearly they don't hate freedom.
In Cairo and Egypt, they're crying out for it.
Exactly.
Azra Nomani, let me come to you. You're saying your headline is, anyway, profile me, please, that this is no witch hunt. What's your concern, Azra?
Well, my feeling is that for many years now, we've been dealing in our Muslim community and in the world with a serious ideology inside of Islam that does say violence against the West and that, extremism is legitimate. And we have had an attempt in America to try to prove our, you know, pluralism, which is a wonderful thing to do, by not really addressing these issues. We've really walked on eggshells about it. And I think that the time has come for us to have an honest conversation about the threat inside of Islamic ideology. There doesn't have to be an indictment of Muslims in this kind of hearing, I believe. There doesn't have to be an indictment of Islam. It's not Islam that's on trial or Muslims. It's about a reality inside of our community that goes all the way back to John Walker Lind, you know, and his conversion and his recruitment into the Taliban. There is an appeal among youth for this type of ideology, and it's a serious threat from these young Somali kids that are going to fight for al-Shabaab and young kids in Northern Virginia who are going to fight for the Pakistani militancy. We're in two wars in America right now, in Iraq and Afghanistan, and it's fueled by an ideology of Islam that is very real. For us to pretend that this ideology doesn't come into our borders is, to me, to just hide our head in the sand, and we really need to break that silence, I think.
Describe what you have seen happening. You write, we've seen the encroachment of extremist interpretations of Islam into our American Muslim community, and as a community, we have largely sat on the fence about these very serious issues. What's that encroachment you're describing?
Well, I think Layla can also speak to this. And, you know, all of us who have had an experience in the world over the last 40 years have seen that out of Saudi Arabia in the 1970s came this very rigid, dogmatic interpretation of Islam that people know as Wahhabism. It's rooted in this political Islam that is very threatened and challenged by the West. And, of course, we've got this, you know, odd contradiction with America being best friends with Saudi Arabia. But the effect has been that through these last 40 years, we have seen this encroachment of this ideology into our communities. As a little girl growing up in Morgantown, West Virginia, I saw it in my community. The men and the women were quickly segregated at our potluck dinner parties because it was that interpretation of Islam that was now being expressed in our community. Women were not allowed at the mosque. And over the next 30 years, then, what I saw was, in fact, Shias were being talked badly about, that anybody who didn't think like the puritanicals thought was being considered a kafir, a non-believer, or an unacceptable Muslim. And slowly but surely, we were getting these sermons being preached from our pulpit that said, don't be friends with the Jews and the Christians. The Western is on a dark path. Do not imitate the disbelievers. And these are the kind of sermons that kids here are hearing, if not from the pulpit, definitely on YouTube. And
so there may be a reality there. I'll put that to Layla as well. Hold that up against American history, where we know that in history there have been, you know, other threats, but there's also the danger of smearing whole communities, whole peoples, Irish, Italian, Japanese in World War II. Do you see that risk here as we look at a sort of a political reality?
Is that a question to me?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, you know, I do see that there can be real, stereotyping happening. But what I feel that happens even more so is that this anger and this rage that's being expressed to Muslims, I believe, is a direct consequence of our denial of this real ideology inside of our community. Peter King said that he was very dismayed because the men at the mosque that he had befriended over the years in Long Island responded to the 9/11 attacks, as many Muslims did in my own community, saying, there couldn't have been Muslims that did it. It was a Jewish conspiracy. And so that culture of denial, I think, feeds the anger. And as long as we say, look, don't single us out, don't identify what is a real problem inside of our community, we just stoke the anger. Mm. And in that way, I think we just stoke the fear also.
Leila Ahmed, do you see denial of a real problem? Do these hearings help or hinder in addressing that, if it's there?
Well, I think Asra has said a number of things that bear thinking about. One is that she's referred to the Wahhabization of Islam. Mm-hmm. And indeed, there has been a transformation, which I've lived in my own life.
And
I've witnessed
more puritanical strain.
Yes, although I wouldn't call it Wahhabization. It's more complex than that. Mm-hmm. It includes the Muslim Brotherhood's views and Islamist revolutions that happened in the Middle East in the 70s. And paradoxically, I mean, Asma is very well known for her wonderful work in reclaiming women's space in mosques. Now, paradoxically, the reason women go to mosque at all is because of this Islamic revival, because in my youth and prior to that, and my mother's in history, mosque going was not part of the tradition, which, by the way, I don't regard as a negative thing, because I'm personally very grateful that I wasn't subjected to a lot of sermons, patriarchal sermons. So, you know, it's a mixed blessing. Asma is very involved. She goes to mosque, and she would not be doing that but for the Islamic revival. I guess what I'm concerned about is the slippage between Asra's talking about a culture of this and that and the work that she does as a feminist asking for women's space in the mosque. Asra, you mentioned that you and your family have been fighting this radicalization. So I think what is happening is the blurring between social radicalism. Their right. We might not like it to have women come through the back door, but it's not criminal. And what I want protection against is criminal activity.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with American Muslims and more about controversial hearings scheduled in Washington tomorrow on the American Muslim community and security. Here's a little more of Peter King. This is on CNN. Last month, the Homeland Security Committee chairman said his hearings would focus on Muslim Americans and specific threats.
If you're investigating everyone, you're investigating no one. We, as a leader, as a chairman of the committee, it's my goal to find out what the real threats are and examine them, not throw everybody into the bag so we can say, oh, everyone's guilty, everyone's responsible.
But some Muslim leaders are afraid that that's exactly what is happening. On Monday, Imam Faisal Rauf, who was in New York at big demonstrations over the weekend, he headed up plans to build an Islamic cultural center near Ground Zero, spoke out against the upcoming hearings on Muslim Americans.
We who are American Muslims, who are loyal to America, want to see the conversation, the paradigm shifted. Islam is not the enemy, extremism is the enemy. When a radical mullah or ayatollah or some person in the Muslim world says something, it radicalizes people here. A person here, whether he's a military colonel or a pastor in Florida, threatens to burn the Quran. That radicalizes people over in the Muslim world. And we want peace today, both here and in the Muslim world.
The Imam speaking this week with CNN. We're joined this hour by Leila Ahmed, author of A Quiet Revolution, and Asra Nomani, whose recent essay in the Daily Beast said, profoundly pleased, King's Muslim hearings are no witch hunt. You can read it at our website, onpointradio.org. Joined right now as well by David Shanzer. He's associate professor at Duke University's School of Public Policy, director of their Center of Terrorism and Homeland Security, co-author of a study issued just last month by Duke and the University of North Carolina titled Muslim American Terrorism Since 9/11 and Accounting. David Shanzer, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
What did you investigate and what did you find?
Well, this was a follow-on study for something we've been doing really for 3 years, which is to look at the Muslim American community in a broad sense and identify how it is dealing with the problem of radicalization and contributing to our counterterrorism policies. And the first thing we did is actually try to go out and count the number of people who have been charged or with a terrorism offense or joined a foreign fighting force abroad to try to get a grip on how large this problem is. And then we updated it a couple weeks ago. And our findings are that over 9.5 years now. We have about 160, 165 individuals in the United States who have, you know, gone all the way up the radicalization path and planned or actually engaged in violence. Now, that's a large number if everybody had been successful, but also we need to put it in context. We're talking about, 15 people per year, and that's a problem, but it's a manageable one.
Of course, it can be pretty bad when Nadal Hassan opens up in the U.S. military base, and we've got real deaths on our hands. How are you looking at that? And what about the Muslim American community, which Peter King has put in the spotlight here?
Well, what's interesting is then you have to look at the specific individuals and how they came to radicalization, moved towards violence. And I think, as I said, I think this is a legitimate area for inquiry. I'm just concerned that it needs to be done in a really careful fashion. The problem with Representative King's statements is that he's saying that this is a problem that essentially emanates from the community, that the community, in a sense, is responsible for these acts of radicalization. And the facts are that these are instances of people who have really isolated themselves from the community. Matter of fact, sometimes been actually rejected and kicked out of the mainstream Muslim community because of their radical views, which the vast majority of Muslims have no interest in and indeed reject.
David Chenzer, what about Peter King?
I think if we look at the phenomenon of radicalization, that's fine, but I think we have to do so in a way we understand that these are people who are adopting a worldview that is not shared by almost all Muslim Americans.
Peter King has asserted repeatedly that 80 to 85% of mosques in America are controlled by Islamic fundamentalists now. What about that characterization? He hasn't cited much much a source for it. But
well, anybody can say anything, but in terms of having evidence, and he bases it on one person who came to Congress and said that, I mean, you can get somebody to come to Congress and say, you know, virtually anything. But it's just, there's no real evidence, there's no studies, there's no surveys, there's no ground truth to that statement.
Do you see a problem, a significant security problem with radicalization in the American Muslim community?
Is this a security problem? Sure. We do not want individuals adopting bin Laden's ideology and engaging in violence here in the United States. It's a tricky problem to solve, but frankly, the most important way we can do that is by having strong relations between the community and law enforcement, between the Muslim community and the non-Muslim community, to try to identify and find these small number of individuals who are heading down the wrong path and intervene before it's too late. And I think that having blanket statements claiming that Muslim Americans are not cooperating with law enforcement, I mean, that's almost like saying that they're not patriotic or they're not engaging in treason against America by not cooperating. I just think those types of statements and the path that these hearings appear to be taking is really counterproductive to what we need to do to stop this national security threat.
And one more, what did you find about Muslim American community cooperation with law enforcement?
Well, we found numerous instances where there was cooperation, and our most recent survey looked at, for the 120 individuals who we could determine how their actions were thwarted, how they were stopped, 48 of those individuals were prevented directly by clues and evidence that came from the Muslim American community. So that was one-third of all of the radicalization we saw over the period since 9/11 was specifically stopped due to the evidence and assistance of the Muslim American community. So I just fundamentally disagree with Representative King's thesis.
David Chenzer at the Center for Terrorism and Homeland Security, director there at Duke University, co-author of the new report out from Duke and the University of North Carolina. Thank you very much for joining us today, David.
Happy to be with you.
Let me get our listeners right in here. Omaha, Nebraska. Lisa, thank you for calling, Lisa. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
Very well. What do you see?
What I see is that, and I work with the general public every day,
In a hospital, okay. Mm-hmm.
In a hospital. I do registration. And I meet people actually from all over the world. And the Muslims that I have met through my education and through my work are all very, very, very polite, responsible people. In every religious group, there are crazy people. If you look in the church that you go to, there is that one person that you feel is absolutely nuts. Timothy McVeigh expressed to be a Christian. There was a gentleman, well, not a gentleman, there was a man a couple of years ago that walked into a Unitarian church and opened fire. He professed to be a Christian.
So what do you think of the hearings tomorrow, Lisa?
I think we need to stop focusing on people's religious beliefs. People that hate enough to kill another person because they don't agree with what they believe,
mm-hmm,
are all terrorists.
Lisa, I appreciate your call very much, and good luck with your work there in Omaha. Let me get one more right here from Brockton, Massachusetts. And Ali, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. So I just want to preface by saying that I used to be a Muslim. I'm no longer a Muslim. I'm an atheist. And I do think that there is a place to investigate and all that, but I don't think that it needs to be politicized to the degree that it is. I feel like there's a lot of over the top rhetoric that even bringing this up in such an open way doesn't really help any investigations. A lot of these things are being done for political purposes rather than any real substantive dealing with the problem, which is a real problem.
Do you think it could hurt, Ali? Do you think it could actually have a negative effect somehow?
I do. I mean, I feel like, I mean, already you're seeing a lot of marginalizations. You're seeing a lot of anti-Muslim protests and go back to your home country and all sorts of troubling signs that you're already seeing. And I feel like giving this kind of thing more attention than, I mean, it's not like this cannot be done whether discreetly or just at least with not so much rhetoric, especially coming up from politicians and elected officials. And I think that kind of gives an okay to then the people who go out and do some of these other bigoted things. Not that I don't think that there are problems that do need to be.
Yeah, Ali, we've got it. I appreciate your call very much as well. Asra, Leila, here's a couple of comments from online here. Rob in New York says, Peter King is in charge of the House Homeland Security Committee. As committee chair, it would be gross dereliction of his duty were Congress not to hold public and private hearings that seek to understand the causes of radicalization that occur in a very small minority of Muslim organizations. That from Rob. On the other hand, here's Patrick says, the days of crackpot congressman and mockingbird journalist is over. Most Americans I know are sympathetic to ethnic minorities, distrust the FBI's entrapment tactics. We are with the Muslims and against these absurd hearings. Asra, let me come to you. You hear Ali saying, okay, and Leila as well, you know, be vigilant, but be careful of too broad a brush. What do you say, Asra?
You know, it may be the journalist in me, but I really believe that public conversation is necessary. I don't believe that this phenomena that we have in the Muslim community is a lone wolf phenomena. You know, from everything that I have seen, from sermons that I've heard to individual cases, people know inside the community, just like our caller was saying, inside of church, you always know who the one person is that you might be a little bit troubled by. And what I would most often hear in my mosque is, well, we hear these trash sermons and we just let them go in one ear and out the other, and we don't take responsibility. And so that's my deeper concern. I mean, it's the same issue that the South had when we were faced with segregation and most people stayed silent. It became an issue of national concern because we decided that it mattered. And in the same way, our national security matters. And so this is a conversation that I believe is only encouraged when we have transparency, and that the anger and the frustration that we're hearing is because we haven't been having those conversations in the name of political correctness.
Leila?
Well, I mean, I do think, of course, the head of Homeland Security has to be vigilant, but I think this includes, first of all, calling in people like David Chancellor, who has studied this and can give you hard facts. I think Asra citing that she hears or sees, I would like to see evidence. What is your evidence for this? I haven't actually seen it, but you may have access to Muslim communities that I don't have. So, but I do want hard evidence, and I think that's exactly what a head of security should be doing, calling in people who study this and who have the knowledge.
Leila, does the lineup of the hearings tomorrow look to you like that kind of lineup? You know, hearings can be engineered in many ways. It depends who you call, how you put them on, and so on. I don't know if you've studied who's going to be there tomorrow, but I wonder what you think, Asra, about this lineup that Peter King has arranged.
Well, you know, I've covered many a hearing, and most times when people are being looked at hearings, they don't want to show up. And so I think a lot of the politics on this is intrinsic to hearings in part. BP did not want to go before a congressional hearing, as did other, you know, automakers and others who have been called under scrutiny. But the hearings that they have tomorrow that have Keith Ellison, the Muslim congressman
from Minnesota,
Zudi Jasser, an activist in Phoenix, and then a Somali American who has talked directly about issues of the radicalization of his community. And so I think also this assumption that it's going to be unfair and it's going to be just, you know, just filled with anger and rage is also something that we're just presuming. I have a feeling it's going to be very anticlimactic, and that, in fact, we can actually have a thorough and reasonable conversation. And we're all the better for it, I think, as a society, because this is an issue that we need to confront.
Let's go to Mike in West Newton, Massachusetts. Mike, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Okay, thank you, and hello.
Hi.
My question is the following. I've been following the issue in the British press, The Guardian in particular, and they've made much of the fact that in earlier times Peter King supported the IRA, which they, and I think I'd agree with, was a terrorist organization. Number one, is that charge valid? And number two, if there is some validity to it, doesn't that say something about this whole procedure where someone who formerly supported terrorism is now in the position of deciding what's terrorism in another context?
It so often depends where you sit, I guess, Mike. Peter King did say in 1982, if civilians are killed in an attack on a military installation, it's certainly regrettable, but I will not morally blame the IRA for it. Eric in Windsor, Vermont. Eric, you're on the air.
Hi there. There might be some understanding that needs to be generated about what Islam is, and I'm by no means an expert in this, but I think a lot of this has to do with the nature of what we've seen from these experiences. It's not like one person trying to cause harm or another necessarily. They're trying to cause major hits to our way of life, the Western way of life, and that's not to say that that's not their way of life. I think it's tough to focus on that smaller extremist subset without a real full understanding. I mean, they talk about 165 people that are on sort of a hot list. But, you know, when you're an everyday American, you don't quite know. And I agree with the last caller. I believe it was the last caller said something about politicizing it. It's also not helping. I think we need to understand more about it. But
Eric, your line is just a little bit too rough, but Leila, is Eric in Vermont saying, look, there's concern out there. Let's not politicize it, but let's look at the real problem. You're saying something similar, but there's enough gap in there that people can be tarred in at the same time as you go after a real problem.
Well, yes, I think what struck me in what Eric was saying is that he said something about to the effect that they don't like our way of life. And I think that's the problem, because it's not really our right to be examining people for what they believe as to whether there should be gender segregation, those kinds of issues. That's very different from not being in support of our democratic way of life or thinking they're going to take any criminal action against us. That's a very different sphere.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with American Muslims and more about controversial hearings scheduled in Washington tomorrow on the American Muslim Community and Security Radicalization, sponsor Peter King says, in this country. I've been joined by Asra Nomani, author of Standing Alone in Mecca, and with me in the studio, Leila Ahmed, author of A Quiet Revolution. Got another guest joining us in just a moment. One call first, Jonathan in Amherst, Massachusetts. Jonathan, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I really agree with what Asra has been saying and the issue of denial. I'm a psychotherapist. I deal with denial all the time. And it's really, the way I see the denial, though, is that we've had no leadership from the top in terms of explaining to the American people, either President Bush or President Obama, explaining to the American people what the nature of politicized, radical, terrorist Islam is. You know, that portion of Islam that has gone off in the bin Laden and other directions, we've never had it explained. Most Americans have very, very, very little idea about it. But the reality is that radical Islam is the biggest threat is to other Muslims. I mean, if you would say since 9/11, the majority of people have been killed, but within this worldwide struggle within Islam between moderates and extremists, the majority of people have been killed have been Muslims all over the world. And it's simply, we're also dealing with it the way, in dealing with it as simply an American problem is ridiculous. You know, the threat is worldwide, and we have allies all over the world who are also trying to stop extremism that comes in, you know, that has come out of, emerged from political Islam. And not just extremism, but let's say terrorist extremism.
And a conflict within the Islamic community, I hear you saying there, Jonathan. Let me look at that. Joining us right now from New York is Mona El-Tahawi. She's a Muslim, a green card holder, Egyptian Muslim, and soon on her path toward American citizenship. She joined us when the huge protests were going on in Tahrir Square in the midst of that vibrant call for freedom and democracy coming out of the Arab world. She was at Sunday Is Today, I'm a Muslim Too rally in New York, Times Square, very, very big rally there. Mona, thank you very much for joining us again at On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
I know you've got a lot to say here, but let's first, if we may, just go to our caller Jonathan's observation. He says, look, there's a kind of struggle within Islam itself over, you know, what is going to be the dominant flavor, if that's the not too light a word, of Islam that's practiced, and we need to acknowledge that. Is that the backdrop here?
You know, I think one thing we have to keep in mind here is that these hearings are incredibly anachronistic, considering what's going on in the Middle East and North Africa, where, as your previous caller said, you know, the majority of people dying from terrorist attacks are Muslims. Because if you look at what's happening with all these revolutions, you've got these ultra-conservative clerics like Yusuf al-Qaradawi and others who are scrambling to catch up with these young people who have led these non-violent revolutions for freedom and dignity. And yet here is Peter King tomorrow talking about, you know, singling out a minority. And I want him, first of all, to acknowledge that IRA pass. I think that's very important because it's very hypocritical of him to throw stones now, considering his own background. But also to understand that what is happening in the Middle East and North Africa is a seismic shift that is affecting the entire world. As I said, even conservative clerics who in the past used to support and legitimized suicide bombings are now saying revolution is great, non-violent revolution is great. So that is a discussion and conversation we're having right now in the so-called Muslim world. The role models now are those non-violent revolutionaries, not the men who are isolated and who go join Al-Qaeda. Even Al-Qaeda itself, Ayman Zawahiri, the number two to Osama bin Laden, has been issuing statements extolling the revolutions. This is the future. Peter King belongs to the past.
So you're saying this radicalization he's looking to track down. You're saying let it be. It's on its way out. That's history. That's old news.
It's definitely on its way out. You know, these hearings would have been necessary right after 9/11, when, yes, there was denial in the Muslim community. But over the past 9.5 years, that denial has been smashed. I absolutely disagree with Asra, and I'm very saddened to hear her take this position, because I've agreed with a lot of her positions in the past. But I know Muslims who have walked out of sermons that have been hateful. I know Muslims who have challenged their hateful imams exams. I know, and as your caller from Duke said, people have been kicked out of the community for expressing extremist views. So let's be real here. The Muslim community has helped law enforcement arrest people. And to single us out now and say we're not doing enough is hypocritical and is totally out of touch with what's happening in the Muslim community at large across the world. This is not the conversation we should be having. We should say, yes, fight radicalism, but not in this way. And also, this is not done in isolation. Remember what happened last year around Park 51. There was a concerted campaign of hate against Muslims in this country. Peter King, Newt Gingrich, Sarah Palin, Pamela Geller, so many people who have an agenda and are using it in a political way because it gets them airtime, because it gets them votes. This all has to be contextualized. This is not happening out of thin air.
Asra Nomani, it is strange timing to be having hearings on radicalization when the story on the planet right now are these cries for democracy and freedom in the streets of the Arab Muslim world.
You know, there isn't one headline that defines our world, and there isn't one definition of what it means to be a Muslim or ideologue in the world today. While there's a revolution, we also have the assassination of a Christian minister in Pakistan by the Pakistani militancy.
A cabinet member.
Right. We have a Taliban that is exercising, you know, great power inside of Afghanistan. And we have a very serious militancy and radicalism inside of our community. I mean, just the comments that I've received in response to my position by people inside of our community, you know, calling me kafir and all of the other names that they use to...
As in foreigner or outside the family.
Right, to basically, you know, shun you and isolate you from inside the community are indicative, again, of the fact that this is very much alive. The revolution in the Middle East may be happening, but at the same time, there's very serious threat that still continues, and we would be naive if we pretend that it doesn't exist.
Layla, there is no one headline.
It will just continue.
There is no one headline that exactly works here, though it's been such a big one. I mean, you know, young Muslims giving their lives for freedom and democracy, putting everything on the line. The juxtaposition is awkward. But Asra says, well, fine, but then, you know, look at the killing in Pakistan, look at radicalization even here in this country.
Yes, but I don't know that what's happening after what nobody predicted what was going to happen in the Middle East. Nobody believed. There was no expert that ever said that this might happen.
So what?
But it has completely. So no, I don't know where we are. I personally feel it has completely devalued the appeal of radical militancy and certainly
these
violence.
These
recent developments were so spectacularly peaceful in the regime, in their methods of achievement on the side of the protesters. And this, I really do think, put a new model. Now, let's hope it continues. But I do think we have on the table something that has superseded Islamic violence as an acceptable way of challenging authority.
Let's go to Sarah in Belmont, Massachusetts. Sarah, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to make a couple of points. The first one is that the vast majority of the plots that have been uncovered in the United States by the subway bombs, the alleged supposed subway bombing plot, or the plot to bring down the Sears Tower, they were all FBI operations. They were the FBI provided the agent provocateur, the materials, the ideas, everything, and they just picked a couple of homeless guys or people who were like unemployed or something and had no resources whatsoever, and they just totally concocted the whole thing. The vast majority of the plots are that. And if the FBI would stop doing this, then maybe we wouldn't have this this constant sort of barrage of headlines of a plot here and a plot there and a plot everywhere.
Sarah, let us pick that up. Asra, let me come first to you. The FBI has been very aggressive here, getting into Muslim communities and, finding people who end up being charged after a lot of cooperation with FBI agents. Sarah's saying, you know, hey, this is kind of a theater here. This is not as real as it might look.
I think there can be a legitimate criticism to that point, but at the same time, I think it speaks largely to this culture of denial. There is clearly an ideology that creates an inclination toward wanting to participate in any kind of plot. If an FBI provocateur came to me and said, hey, you want to bomb, you know, the White House, I would be like, you know, what are you talking about? No, I'm absolutely not interested. But as long as you have a culture in which this kind of ideology is accepted or people don't challenge it, then there will be one child, perhaps, who will go toward that kind of plot and will take a flight to Somalia or to Pakistan. And, you know, I would hope, just like Leila and Mona are suggesting, that, you know, the future will be of a different nature. But this element continues to exist inside of our communities, and we are better served by being honest about it instead of denying it.
Mona, do you agree the element is there? Do you see a concern that the hearings could actually, in a weird way, you know, create a backlash that would aggravate this problem?
I've never denied the problem is there, Tom. I was writing opinion pieces in the Washington Post 2 months after 9/11 saying we have to end our denial. Many people have been speaking out about this, but it's incredibly disingenuous of Asra to continue to say that no one is speaking out, because she knows very well many of us have spoken out. What was this rally? How many Muslims were at this rally on Sunday speaking out against radicalization, but also saying these hearings are unfair? We have to place these hearings in a context. What is the background of Peter King? Why is it Peter King himself? It's not just because he's head of Homeland Security. He has a political past here. The past year in this country, the year 2010, has been one full of hateful rhetoric against American Muslims. This is not happening in thin air. This is not about denial. Yes, there are elements in the community we need to weed out, and we are weeding them out. But when you have a hearing like this that claims 80 to 85% of Muslim mosques are run by fundamentalists in the way that Peter King says, with absolutely no evidence whatsoever, you know that this hearing is already biased from the get-go. And also, you place it in the context of what happened with this community center and mosque. I was outside of Park 51. In Manhattan. I was outside of Park 51 last year during Labor Day weekend to support activists who were supporting its right to build. I saw the hate in the faces of Tea Party supporters who came out to yell. One person left a bag full of dog excrement outside of this building. There is real hate here towards Muslims. And what is happening is the Muslim community, yes, we have been speaking out. We need to mix. We need to speak to our neighbors. We need to explain what a Muslim is in this country. But at the same time, as that minority, by being singled out, we are giving a free ride to people who use hate to single out minorities. And we've seen what happens in the past when that happens. And we're not creating this atmosphere of come and speak to me. What is Islam about? Well, I'm a Muslim. I'm an American. To be questioned in this way, to have our patriotism to this country questioned in this way during this political climate is extremely dangerous. And as a Muslim, you know, if he had a more fair hearing, I would be out there and tell him we had lots of people who were denying this, but now we faced it. This is a biased hearing from the get-go, and I think what it will do is it will put Muslims on the defensive, and that doesn't help anyone. And as many of your callers have been saying, and as the Duke person was saying, Muslims have helped with law enforcement. Muslims, you know, the Times Square bomber, it was a Muslim. It was a Muslim who was selling handbags in Times Square who drew law enforcement attention to the fact that this car was about to blow up. So let's be real here and put this in the context of what's happening in the United States today.
Let me get a call from Omaha, Nebraska. John, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you. I have a question. Why don't we, instead of just monitoring or doing a review on the Muslim religion, why don't we look at all religions as a whole? Because as another caller pointed out, there are extremists in every religion. All religions, to the best of my knowledge, receive tax status from the government. So why does the government not have the authority to look at what these tax-free organizations are doing? I just think it would be a very useful audit. Thank you very much.
John, I appreciate your call. And one more, Jay in Crawfordsville, Iowa. Jay, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I just want to say that I think the hearings that are coming up is something that needs to take place. I don't know much about the Muslim community at all in our country. I think the hearings will shed some light onto what may be happening in that community. I have a general fear, I guess. I assume this is happening all over the country, but I think we just need to get more understanding of what might be happening, and I don't see any problem with these hearings taking place.
Do you see any you have any concern about vilifying a community, Jay?
Well, there is that concern. We have in the past gone that route, but I think we're in a time in our history right now where I don't think that can take place. But I think one of your guests spoke about walking on eggshells when it came to speaking out on something like this. I think this conversation does need to take place, and the hearings will help in that regard.
Jay, I appreciate your call. Mona, is it possible that we'll get insight out of this? I mean, to sit down together and talk sounds like a good thing. On the other hand, we know hearings, they are structured, and they are very deliberate in the way they're put together. Could something good come from this?
I'm a huge fan of talk, Tom. I'm a huge fan of airing all our dirty laundry out. Mm-hmm. I love all of that. But again, it's the context that we're talking about. In a country where only 38% of Americans say they know a Muslim, only 38% of Americans, anything that is said about Islam these days is taken as fact. You have someone like Bridget Gabriel who peddles hate, who goes on Fox News, who goes on a whole host of other media outlets and has these speaking tours across the country saying the most outrageous things about Muslims, and people believe her because they don't know anything. Your previous caller just said, I know very little about Islam and Muslims.
But he wants to learn, and he's maybe turning to these hearings to learn.
Well, see, that's the thing. Where do you learn? Do you learn from hearings that are going to start brushing an entire community with this word, radicalization? What do you learn from that? You immediately pull back and think Muslims are a bunch of crazy lunatics. The conversation should happen on a national stage, yes, but not when you're highlighting a community for something that is bad, radicalization.
Mona, are you sticking on your path to American citizenship with this kind of concern?
I am, because obviously this country needs a lot of help, Tom.
Okay. You sound like you're ready to give it, and we'll take it. Mona El-Tahawi joining us there from New York. Green card holder, Egyptian, one day American, we hope. Mona, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Leila Ahmed, the Harvard Divinity School, author of A Quiet Revolution, The Veil's Resurgence from the Middle East to America, out next month. Thank you very much for joining us, Leila.
Thank you.
And Asra Nomani, author of Standing Alone in Mecca. Thank you very much for your insights and observations today, Asra. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'm glad we're having the conversation.
Listeners, thank you for being here as well. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.